How can you find, fund, and fix planet-sized problems? First, you need to be informed. And that starts here with the DOI Podcast.
Well, what's up, everybody? Podcast number 45, 5-23-22. Welcome into the most meaningful crypto conversation on the interwebs this evening because it involves you. We've got a lot of news to go through. Ecuador gets some Bitcoin ATMs. How about PayPal? Are they going to start accepting cryptos and when? Russian prisons turned into mining organizations. We're going to be talking about MyDAO, DAO Planet NYC, and DAOs in general this evening. So stay tuned. But we're going to do it together. Corey, what's going on, buddy?
Oh, man. Leading in strong whenever you're talking about Russian prisons turning into mining facilities there. That just sounded...
Mining with no, they're not going to use any pitchforks to do this mining because they're in prison. That would be illegal.
Oh, well, isn't that good?
But indentured servitude in there is not a problem, especially if it's for computers.
Oh. I thought the only thing you could do in prison was make license plates.
Oh, man, that's a show we could talk about one evening, the prison work that gets done. Exciting times. Ooh. Stay tuned here on the DOI Podcast. Just bringing the exciting news. No, man, how was your weekend? Good?
Yeah, fantastic. You know, per usual, it's nonstop. Whenever you get involved with crypto, it seems like there's always something to be done or to talk about or someone to engage with and something meaningful to be a part of. So.
Yeah.
A lot of conversations going on in the background. Happy to be a part of all this revolution along with all of you here, the podcast and beyond.
So, wild ride.
Wild ride. Yeah. Hey, you know what I thought was interesting that we found out not too long ago? The number of people that have been downloading the podcast, like that have been recorded.
Yeah. I don't know where our actual number is today, but I think it was 250 or 260 downloads.
This month, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy considering we haven't put any effort into marketing it at all.
Yeah.
So clearly someone somewhere listened to it, and I guess they're continuing to. So,
hey, word of mouth pushes good ideas along.
Yeah.
You know, we've kind of seen, that's something that we've seen from the beginning, right? That this, the story of what's going on here is something that's better relayed than put out into a quick advertisement. Just doesn't work the same way. It's more of a long-form conversation.
Yeah, so I don't think that there's any Twitter post that you can put where you say, education to the moon, drive a Lambo tomorrow.
Hey, that might get someone in, though. They would be disappointed when they showed up with no Lambos.
How much money do I have to spend to get all the education?
Yeah. Well, let's dig into the news together. There is a lot going on this weekend, and it seems like they are really ramping up on getting some governance rules set in place and some regulations. And we start off with the U.S. chairman of the CFTO, no, CFTC. They are looking at security exchanges and going to start prosecuting.
Ooh.
Yeah, well, like they're throwing down the hammer in a bunch of places, and they're like, hey, something's going to change.
You know, at the end of the day, I mean, it probably needs to. And by probably, I mean absolutely so.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and it's something that we've mentioned a bunch of times, man. Regulations brings in the big money. So they're going to have to start regulating it and get some ground rules set in place at least. And I think that's more what they're talking about, right? Just that, like, the basic ground rules of what's going on, and that so many of these places are not registering, nothing's going on.
Yeah, truly. So, testifying before the Congressional Subcommittee on Wednesday, Securities and Exchange Commission Chair Gary Gensler fired yet another warning shot, said crypto exchanges should come in and register, or frankly, we're going to continue to use what Congress has given us in our enforcement and examination functions. So that said, I do think that it's important to this point to talk about regulations, but it's kind of hard to say, hey, come in and register, or we're going to come after you. But yet nobody really understands what you're registering for and what they'd be coming after you
right
for.
Yeah, that does make it very difficult when there's not even a rule book placed down, and they're basically threatening to come at you for violating the rules.
Yeah, what rules?
Yeah. Well, I mean, unless the typical fraud, you know, there's already rules in contract law that prohibit you from doing fraudulent things. So that's what's something that they could come after them for. But they're asking them to come in and register, and they're, you know, I think they're saying the same thing. Register for what? Like, we're not that. And they're like, no, you are that. And they're like, no, we're not that. And who's going to win that battle, right?
Yeah. Well, that said, the SEC has to date brought more than 80 enforcement actions against crypto asset offerings mm-hmm. and platforms. So Gensler argued on Wednesday that such actions were well within his agency's purview, saying, I think the rules are actually quite clear that if you're raising money from the public and the public anticipates a profit based on the efforts of that sponsor, that's a security. But according to this article and to me, that situation may not be so simple. Historically, the SEC has not clarified which crypto assets it classifies as securities versus some that it said could be considered commodities and thus outside its jurisdiction. The same way the congressional session Wednesday referred to Bitcoin as a commodity due to the blurred lines between cryptocurrencies and assets, crypto firms fined or subpoenaed by the SEC have expressed frustrations at doing their best to follow poorly articulated laws only to face legal repercussions later.
Yeah. To the tune of $2 billion, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of money.
So I do want to pause for just a second as I was reading this and thinking about it earlier, prior to this podcast. How do you feel, Phil, and then community, how do you feel in the podcast chat about us maybe picking a law that's currently being talked about, or a bill that's gone to the Senate, or something maybe even in a different country besides the United States, but picking one that's in the talks and then actively digging into it and seeing what we can do to become engaged in it, or at the very minimum, inform.
Well, I love it, right? I enjoy law. I enjoy learning about law, contract law, pretty much all of it, right? If it pertains to legal stuff, I enjoy learning it because that's the rule book writers, right? They're the ones that do it. And what I like most about it is that we develop we really build our language of legalese as we're going through those. You discover words that you didn't understand, and then you gain a new understanding of a language. It's called legalese.
So that said, I'm going to throw in a chat. I'm getting some positive feedback on that concept, but I want to give some. Keep in mind, legalese is also, too, not the most exciting podcast in the world. So we can do our best to maybe throw in some exploding cars or something in the background as we dig into the nuances of the legalese.
Well, you know, and it's not an exciting read all the time, yet it is what governs our lives. So to not understand it is kind of foolish. And if we can find a way to understand it together, I think it's a good idea to explore it for sure.
I think so too. Yeah. And to that point, I tell you what, ladies and gentlemen, if we can make crypto regulations exciting, if we could possibly do that on this podcast, then quite frankly, we will be the most exciting crypto podcast on the interwebs.
Yes. We'll save that for Friday night, party night.
Yeah, this is whenever you're going to take your friends and family, you're going to sit them down, you're going to have a barbecue, and you're going to listen to crypto regulations.
Law talk with the doy.
Yeah.
We'd have to do the entire thing in an NPR voice, which is very smooth and comforting, while we're telling you the world's falling apart. Oh man, let's move on. There's a lot of news, and let's try to jump through a couple of these quick. We've got some good conversation. If you're listening on Clapper or on stalking on Facebook, we love you, but we would like to see you here in the chat. So come over and join us on Discord. We'd love to engage with you. You know, Trade Minister of Russia says Russia will inevitably legalize crypto payments. And I thought it was kind of interesting that they're moving slow, right? Like you would think that they would implement this quickly because of their economic situation, but they're not quite there yet.
Yeah. Well, so on that point, question, and I'm going to dig into the article a little bit for the listeners here, but before I do, why do you think that is?
Why are they slow rolling it? So off the top of my head, my thought would be that they're not sure exactly who's going to, okay, we've already seen evidence that they're blocking certain wallets, right, of the quote unquote oligarchs and ministers over there and big money people. They're blocking them. So it might be that they're trying to figure out exactly how they're going to implement it under sanctions, right? And I don't see the sanctions falling off immediately or for that matter anytime soon. It still seems like there's some other countries joining on. So I would think they're trying to work out the details that way.
Okay.
But it's possible so they just want a full account before they even do it, because there was another story last week where they were basically wanting to know, Putin saying, hey, I want to know everybody's transactions. I want to know what you're doing. And that was directed to quote unquote his, you know, the ministers there, but officials. But I think that they probably want to get a tally on the country before they start kicking it off all the way.
I think that seems like a fair assessment from the outside in. So you're thinking it's more of just a typical large organization trying to understand what it is or isn't before they step into it, other than a carefully mapped strategy in order to put all the pieces on the chessboard in a manner which benefits them the most.
Yeah, and I think there's even more at risk for them, because right now, being under sanctions, if they spend a ton of time in trying to implement something that isn't going to work, it's just, you know, just cost them more months of a horrible economy.
Truly. Well, on that note, Russia will legalize crypto payments sooner or later, according to Minister of Industry and Trade of the Russian Federation, Denis Mantarov. The country's government has been exploring various crypto adoption plays throughout 2022, but has yet to finalize any concrete policy. However, legalization has been recommended by Russia's finance ministry via its on digital currency, quote unquote, bill from April. According to the translation, the Thursday report, whenever Mantarov was questioned at the New Horizon Educational Forum this week about whether legalized crypto payments were in the works, he said, I think so. The question is when this will happen, how it will happen, and how it will be regulated. Now both the central bank and the government are actively engaged in this, but everyone is inclined to understand that it is a trend of the time, and sooner or later, in one format or another, it will be carried out.
Yeah. Well, it's happening already though over there, though, right? So they're just trying to figure out a way to bring it into some kind of a legal structure.
Yep.
Yeah, but they'll,
the Central Bank of Russia and the Ministry of Finance have, up until recently, held entirely opposing views, however, on crypto regulation, with the central bank looking for an outright ban while the ministry sought regulation for taxation. So clearly, you can see how the conversation is progressing, and it's more towards taxation regulation than it is a ban. So, question, what do you think the outcomes will be for the markets if Russia goes ham?
Well, because they're under so many sanctions, I'm not sure because I don't know. There's enough players that are playing ball with them still, though, that it seems like they're going to make it even under the sanctions. So it will probably increase it, to answer your question.
Yeah, I think it does make a more complex moral conversation for those who are still on the fence about whether or not it will happen, although for those of us who are on this podcast, who probably agree with at least me, and I think I can speak for you on this too, Phil, that it's going to happen regardless. It's right. Just whether or not we shape it, what that looks like. But for those on the fence on whether or not they can stop it, which, you know, I think we're past that, but they might have some moral arguments if they believe that the sanctions on Russia are moral and just. Now, That said, I don't think that those people, however, are going to make the biggest sway in the value of cryptocurrencies, crypto assets at large. And I think the people who are going to make the biggest sway in or out of those markets are going to be the ones that are already vested in there and are just seeking its adoption. So I don't see Russia having a negative outcome, yeah, would be my take.
Yep, I would agree. It's not going to be a negative. Maybe it doesn't have a huge impact, but I don't see how it's going to be a negative one on the market anyways. We shall see. We shall see. But Cyprus, moving on, Cyprus drafts crypto rules, and they may introduce before the EU regulations. So the EU is working towards their own regulations. And Cyprus basically just said, well, we're going ahead and moving on with ours. And you can imagine that if the EU comes out with something that is similar or complements them, that they would shift over to the EU rules so they don't get blocked out. But they're ready to get going in the game.
Yeah. So to that point, question, what do you think would happen if Cyprus and the EU have a difference of opinion on those regulations?
My opinion is they're probably going to shift, right? And they will be able, once the EU comes out with a regulation package on it, so to speak, they'll probably find the good parts of it and compromise. I don't know how they would fight that battle. Going out ahead of it is one thing, but then if it comes out and it is different, I think they probably would adopt it or you know, modernize theirs, so to speak, to line up with it.
Yeah, that's an interesting take, because the EU having this bond, if you will, economic and otherwise, especially with the whole Russia-Ukraine thing, I think it's an interesting play if there is a huge advantage for one individual player to do something separate from the collective. So I agree with you that they probably would, but it is an interesting thing to watch, because if somebody did do something different, I think that could have ripples outside of crypto.
Yes.
And to other alliances.
Yeah, I think so. Now, the question will come in is, if Cyprus kicks off something that is more stringent than the EU, although I don't think that'll happen. I think what'll come out of the EU will be more rigid than what Cyprus is going to do, although they haven't really said everything yet. And I think they'll just have to raise their standards and conform to it.
Well, so that's the thing. And so to this point, to talk about Cyprus briefly, quoted in the daily newspaper, Kokinos, which is the one of the lawmakers over there in Cyprus, said, "I can tell you that Cyprus welcomes the use of digital and crypto assets, but we still need to be very careful and respect not only the regulations currently in place, but also the absence of regulations." And they also added some nuances. The deputy minister then revealed that they've already drafted a very attractive bill on crypto assets. So I guess my question might be is, what happens if Cyprus or someone else sees that they can be an economic powerhouse if they have not as stringent regulations, and then the collective regulations from the EU come and they go, well, that could be a difference between us bumping our GDP by 20% or bumping our GDP by 20,000%. What move would you make then?
Well, I guess it depends on whether it comes down to war.
Yeah.
So, and you know, believe it or not, wars are fought over money. You know what I'm saying? It's like, everybody knows that, but, you know, literally it can be fought over that. So I think there would probably have to be a compromise, or they might find themselves on the outs. And nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. Especially not in a turbulent, in a turbulent atmosphere. And any time that nations are at war, I think that it brings turbulence everywhere. So I think there will be people more likely to try not to rock the boat than in a time where we are in quote unquote peacetime.
So, speaking of peacetime, this is cool. One-click Bitcoin payments are now available in 30 countries.
Right.
With Primer. Yeah. Yeah.
That's going to change everything, right? When they start getting that kind of a process worked down, it's going to enter into everywhere.
Well, truly, because whether or not we can wrap our heads around on an individual level all the time, all the possibilities and benefits of new technologies, let's be real, we appreciate things that are simple and beautiful.
Yes.
Or both. So if something's simple, you're like, oh, all I got to do is tap my phone, tap my watch, whatever, and boom, it's paid for. It's simple, it's secure, done. Then that's ultimately at the end of the day, whether or not you understood credit cards or wanted to carry it around or all the little chips and have to remember codes and stuff like that, you're like, I just want to use my checkbook. You know, some point in time, whenever you're not sitting in the grocery aisle writing out a check for 42 minutes, you know, you took credit cards. And then now they're getting to the, you know, tap to pays, and if you got one click checkouts, man.
I will tell you that this weekend I stood in line at Lowe's and with a cart full of crap, and the lady in front of me was, when I walked up to the register, she was writing a check, okay? And everything was down. All their computers were down. It was cash or check. And it makes me wonder, that's not going to be fun to go through, right? Once everything is digital. But I honestly think that before that happens, the battery situation will work itself out. And energy storage will work itself out in a different way than we have it now. Because once everything is digital, that system can't go down, right? There has to be a different reliance factor than there is now, and a reliability factor than there is now. And I think that's going to be fixed in the next few years, you know, about the same time that this builds up to everybody using it for everything.
Let's pause for just a second, see if there's any weird thoughts in the podcast chat here. What will happen if we're in a fully digital monetary system and the power goes out? What then?
Chaos then. Well, you know, how long is it down for, right?
Well, I do think that there are other solutions. There are a couple in mind that are swirling through my head of things that could be done. But I kind of, we're getting Mad Max. We're getting I Will Chill. Yeah, I'll chill too.
Yeah.
I like that.
I can't imagine it being down for, you know, if it's down for a long time, it will be a problem, especially if they've worked cash out of the society completely by then, which I actually think that's going to take a lot longer. There'll just be a lot less of it and less people using it. But I think that it's still going to be around for quite some time.
Well, to that point, I think what would happen is if you ran you had a digital currency system and you didn't have any backup, then what would happen is there would need to be third parties that provided that stopgap. What I mean by that is that you need to be able to have, like, same way that whenever you're at Walmart and somebody, you go to look for something, they like, oh, they now look it up on their phones, right? And they say what aisle it's in, where it's at. They have that interface. I think what would happen is they would have battery-powered devices, probably phones, that would operate as a POS system in that sense that, like, there's, as long as you've got phone charge, somebody in that facility has phone charge, and they can operate as that point of sale system. And I think that there are secure and safe ways to do that, to where we can essentially always transact, even as long as we have a cell phone, because we've seen that happen in Africa, where they don't have the same kind of infrastructure. Yeah. And for that matter, in places where they literally have solar powered devices to charge their phones, and they have otherwise no access to, you know, any type of energy grid, and they're still able to interact with one another.
Well, hopefully by then Elon's got his what's his thing called, Starnet or Skynet, or going to cover the world in Wi-Fi. Hopefully that's done by then. That would be helpful.
You just call it Skynet?
Yeah, whatever it's called. I'm ready for it. Whatever it's called, Elon, get it to my house. Right now you're not there, and I need you to be there for me, buddy.
If I remember correctly, it's been a while, but it wasn't Skynet from Terminator.
Oh, yes, it was. What's his thing called? Starlink. That's Starlink. It. Starlink.
I am definitely not ready for Skynet.
No, probably not. It's a little ominous, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so I'll settle for Starlink then.
Yeah, Starlink, yeah. We're getting some chat from Eridow there. Lean into the smart home. It wants to serve you.
Yeah, no doubt.
So for those who don't know, there's an interesting show on Netflix called Love, Death, and Robots, and there's actually an episode about the smart home. And we'll just leave it at that. It's
Man, I tried to watch this. Are all of those shows cartoons?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I clicked on it because I didn't think it was a cartoon, and then it was a cartoon, and I was a little disappointed. Maybe I should go back and watch one. I'll watch the smart home episode.
There's a number of different episodes, and each one is
I think that's the one I maybe started watching, and it had something with a vacuum that was attacking. Are we on the same page?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that was pretty wild. I mean, we had a
plot line, but yeah.
Well, I think there's more than one episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not afraid of ruining a plot line here. We're not here for movie reviews. So if you're going to watch that, I'm really sorry.
Yeah, I do have to agree with Eridow, though. It's less likely to be some kind of Terminator scene and more like, because that doesn't make any money. Although a sustainable war can make money for those who are, you know, into the Ghost in a Shell series. But the sustainable war can make money. But at the same time, I would say it's more likely, like in the podcast chat, you know, ads. Your home is going to be recommending all kinds of things to you. And the lines are going to be blurred between what's actually best for you or what's best for the corporations who have paid the most money for that data and two-way interaction.
Yeah, and we should know just from being educated, the lines really shouldn't be blurred. If it's free, we're the product.
Yeah, well, but that would be so tricky, though. Like, whenever your refrigerator is like, at first your refrigerator will ask you, right? It's going to be like, Corey, it looks like you are low in orange juice. Would you like me to order it for you? You go, yes. The same brand as usual? Sure would. And then eventually it's going to just do it without, you know, asking, which, by the way, Amazon is already in the works of doing.
Well, I don't really have a problem with that as long as it also doesn't have a scanner on it that scans me and tells me, Mr. Ward, you're too fat for the cookie dough you ordered. That's not going to be cool.
So as long as you're a cog in the machine, but choose.
Yeah. Don't shut the cookie dough off, bro. If I can tell it that it'll be okay.
All right. Well, there we go. I can accept that future. Lots of cookie dough and, you know, tell me what products to buy.
Right.
Or don't even tell me at all. Just, you know, charge my credit card.
Yeah, that's what's coming. You know, Amazon actually did a study on that, right? And from what I remember from the study, it was 5%. If they can get the number down, the predictive predictively sending products that you want or need, and they can get the return rate down to 5% or under, they're fine. They'll just send out the 95% and know that you'll accept it. And that you either use it, you are ready for it, or at least you're not going to return it. And then they're there.
So, speaking of which, this is the teenager playful anarchist side of me that you know, that's coming out here. This is for those I'm clearly a builder, not a destroyer. But you know what would be super funny is whenever Amazon gets that going, if you just like spoofed Amazon and then start sending packages to people, like, because they have the predictive packaging, so the things you send are like supposed to be for you, but then you started sending packages to like your neighbors that like put them in really precarious situations because they had to explain to like their spouse why they're getting certain products in the mail constantly sent to them, and they're like we thought that you would really like this, and they're like, no, I wouldn't like that. Like, I feel like you could really get some people into some trouble, and I'll let you fill in the blanks from that. I'm a very good
fat boy. That's what I think about that. Corey, come on now. Be nice. Don't be sending Amazon packages out that you shouldn't be sending out.
I'm not going to do it. I'm too busy for that. But I feel like it's kind of like that that age-old joke about going to the grocery store and like buying or going to the department store and buying a bunch of weird random stuff together that like tells some kind of awkward story for the checkout clerk.
You mean like shovel and duct tape?
shovel, duct tape, a 55 rubber duckies, and some baby powder. You know, it's like, you're like, what in the world is going on?
Nowadays, though, I mean, that might have worked back in the day 5 years ago. But right now, in the day we live in, the cashier is also watching McClapper or TikTok, or maybe cruising through Snapchat while she's checking you out. So she probably won't notice.
Yeah, or thinks it's just part of some TikTok challenge or something like that, because it probably is.
You're the fourth one that came through this week.
Speaking of what's something that'd be super cool if it were a TikTok challenge, the G7 finance leaders call for swift and comprehensive crypto regulation. Wouldn't that be cool if they all started having TikTok challenges about, like, the most entertaining ways to interact and update us on what they're talking about in the background?
I don't know if cool is the right word, but maybe sad. But that's the only way they can reach us. How are we going to reach the people? A 14-second TikTok video. That's all they can handle, guys.
I mean, it wouldn't be entirely wrong.
No, so. I know. It's a difficult position to try to understand some of these things that they're doing, right?
Yeah. So following the crypto market turmoil with Luna and UST, G7 countries are calling for swift and comprehensive regulation of crypto assets. The finance ministers and central bank governors from the group of seven, G7, industrialized nations, convened in Bonn and Königswinter, Germany, on the 18th to the 20th year of May. Among the topics they discussed was crypto regulations following the turmoil with Luna and USD. And G7 supports work by the Financial Stability Board, FSB, to monitor and address financial stability risks arising from all form of crypto assets, and welcomes increasing global cooperation to address regulatory issues associated with the use of these crypto assets. So they're going to work in close coordination with internal standard setters on crypto regulation.
I will tell you, the scariest part of the story to me is when they call for swift and comprehensive. That's scary, right? Because anytime they all come together on something really quick, we know who loses. That's mostly us.
Yeah. You know, as wild as this sounds, and this has nothing to do, gosh, it's going to sound so horrible taken out of context. I probably even shouldn't say it, but probably I can't stop myself.
You probably shouldn't. I'll edit it. I'll cut it out. Don't worry about it.
Okay. Taking political things aside, Russia's slow and methodical step into crypto is less scary to me than the G7, mm-hmm. which we don't get to vote on their policies, being swift and comprehensive.
Yeah.
So this is coming from somebody who clearly lives in the United States. So I've got a skewed perspective on things that I support, which towards, you know, American ideals, for better or for worse. You know, and that's kind of ever since the Rocky movies, there's always been a Russia-America thing. You know, I got to thank Sylvester Stallone for that script. Nonetheless, it's just, whenever you don't get to vote in the leaders creating something, you know, it's like this group, it's kind of like the World Health Organization creating like some big comprehensive package that all the countries are going to adopt, but yet the individual leaders don't have to vote in those policies. Those things scare me more than anything else.
What? How could that be scary? That's the most ridiculous. I mean, it's absolutely absurd. It's infuriating. I probably shouldn't even start talking.
Well, I already went too far anyway.
So. I know. I'm going to stop right now. Sorry, guys. Hey. That little bit of information made my blood boil. It's crazy. I mean, what they're asking to do, or what they're trying to do, is outrageous. And it looks like they're going to have enough countries that bite into it to try to give it some kind of legs. And I think it's pretty outrageous.
Well, so that said, it seems like there's been a lot of regulation news today. My goodness, I guess Luna really stirred some stuff up, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and they shed light on a weak spot, right? And whenever that happens, you know, it's hard to even talk. It's even hard to talk about that Luna situation without referring back to, you know, kind of how it fell apart or why. But it's definitely revealed a weak spot, and it's going to have to get fixed.
Truly. Now, to that point, I mean, just looking at the news, we've got so much amazing news, but it is so heavily regulated here.
It is.
Is perhaps maybe just because Finlec's getting a bit heavy, maybe we talk about the warden illegally mining Bitcoin from a prison.
Yeah, how about that?
Russian law enforcement officials are investigating a crypto mining operation in Butrika, Russia's oldest prison. A deputy warden has been accused of stealing electricity to mint digital coins with the help of unidentified accomplices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you can imagine over there, man, if you want to do it right, you just got to go snag you up a good programmer, put some charges on him, bring him in, to get to work. However you say that in Russian, I'm not sure.
Get to the works. Sorry, once again, I got my history from Rocky and Rocky 2, Rocky 3, and especially Rocky 4. So, anyway, yes, get to work.
Yeah, it's amazing when you watch TV from an American perspective how many different countries speak English with just a heavy accent.
Yes, it's like the whole world speaks English, just like with different accents.
Yep, that's right.
That's how it works, right?
It doesn't. Americans, not that cultured.
Yeah.
So we do have some other stuff to get into, the Dow stuff. So we should hit the last couple stories in here because they are not so heavy in regulations, because some of these are just pretty steep. Ecuador, another cool story in here is Ecuador's first Bitcoin ATMs installed. And to me, it's really interesting that some of the economies that we don't think of being strong economies are really implementing cryptos fast. They're adopting them very quickly because their financial system that they've been depending on is not very stable or is not very profitable. So they're in a position to pivot really fast, which I think is pretty good.
I think that's incredibly good, and especially to those who are first, either pave the way for the second, or the ones who reap the returns. That said, either it's a pretty momentous time. I would have loved to have been the person who put in that Bitcoin ATM, though. I feel like I would have had to have gotten myself next to the picture with the thumbs up and everything like that, celebrated that. That's a pretty momentous occasion for the first ATM installed in Ecuador.
Well, you know, and the ATMs mean basically that it's moving mainstream. And we move down just a little bit and we see a story that pops up. PayPal may soon accept all forms of crypto, reveals vice president. Now, something that I found interesting in here is that they said all. Now, I don't know if that means every different coin or just all forms, right? I don't know what they would mean except for all other than all.
That is a good question, isn't it?
Yeah.
I would have to imagine that it would be all forms.
Right.
Not as opposed to all, because that would mean that, what was that soda coin that came that we were joking about the other day?
Gosh.
Like, that means they'd have to start accepting soda coins.
Yeah.
And clearly that could be bad. Unless you're, I don't know, really, really into sodas or something.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like it's got any staying power, I think is what you're saying. But, you know, as you know, PayPal was the leader in online purchases, right? They were out of the gate and they kind of brought that kind of payment system to fruition. So when they're looking at it as a feasible solution and they are looking at adopting it, you know, once they adopt it, and if Amazon adopts it, it's done, right? Everything's done. It's here for sure. And I don't know how far Amazon will be off, but this kind of announcement from PayPal, you know, I don't think that Amazon is going to, my thought is, you know, Amazon took PayPal over and they took that market share. And I don't think that they're going to do anything to lose that. So I don't believe that they will let PayPal come on strong with accepting all different kinds, or at least a lot of different currencies, cryptos, without implementing their own strategy.
Interesting. So essentially what you're saying, which I think is a conversation to be had now and one to pop into particular circles, is what you're saying is currency as a service is going to be something that e-commerce platforms are going to have to compete on.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
especially right now in the beginning, right?
Now, I think that the currency as a service, or crypto as a service, let's call it, or crypto assets as a service, whatever you might package it as, is something a lot of people have thought is, hey, if we offer it individually on a one-to-one level, that maybe we'll get more sales or more exposure, publicity, whatever it might be. But if you do it as an ecosystem, then especially PayPal, what PayPal can do where they offer crypto as a service is they can Shopify the whole thing and allow individual retailers, like on eBay or just in general, to package up PayPal onto their websites and to compete against Amazon. And if Amazon isn't able to offer that crypto as a service for those retailers, those resellers inside of Amazon, then that could give a competitive advantage to PayPal. Am I understanding your argument correctly?
Yeah. And I honestly don't think there's any way that Amazon will allow that to happen.
Now, what do you think the opportunity is for someone else besides PayPal, like maybe an oncoming player that to offer crypto as a service to Shopify the experience of building your own platform online?
I don't know right now in the world that we live in today, or tomorrow for that matter. I don't know how you come in and compete against PayPal or Amazon. Really, the only reason I think that PayPal is able to compete against Amazon was because they were first, and they already had a huge user base before Amazon really started growing and gaining traction. But I don't know how you come in and compete against them. You know, niche markets, you know, like what Etsy does, art and that kind of stuff. So if you can cater to a niche market, I think you can do it.
Okay. Yeah, just don't try to sell diapers, or Amazon will put you out of business.
It pretty much. I mean, or just buy you, right? So that, which is a strategy, you know, it is a strategy. If you can build something, if you can be kind of a mom and pop startup, and you can get something good enough and you can get traction, then you can sell it out to one of the bigger companies, which you see them doing all the time. They just acquire their competition.
That's true. And there are, by the way, looking at the podcast chat, a lot of good suggestions here. So Stripe, for instance, has been making some moves, of course, to Intuit, which has like the QuickBooks, create a competitive ecosystem as well, too. But to your point, I think besides niche, I think it'd be very hard to compete with any of those billion-dollar players.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't really see how you will, especially, you know, Amazon. They've got, you know, and for that matter, Google, right? So what ends up happening, I think, a lot of times is you not only are you trying to compete on a scale issue where they have the lock on the market and they've got delivery, they've got everything figured out. It seems like you are often going to them to satisfy those parts, right? The shipping and this kind of stuff, and you know, God help you if you're going to try to go up against Google, because they just put you, you know, number 437,000th in the search result, and you don't ever get seen.
Truly.
So don't try to start another Google is my advice.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be funny? Try to start another Google, and the way you do it is by tagging yourself with all the search engine results to optimize yourself on Google, so that way you can get found.
They'll shut you down.
Like, this is a great business plan. It's going to work.
Yeah. They'll shut you down today. Today, for sure.
Yeah.
So, Corey, I see that you just dropped in the BitDAO, and we're going to dig into this as kind of a bit of an educational piece and to start understanding DAOs better. You know, we've been causing a stir over on Clapper talking about DAOs. And so we're going to dig into that a little bit more. So, and Corey, we also wanted to mention, why don't we take just a second to talk about what Adam Miller's got going on over at MyDAO. He's got a bunch of speaking engagements. And if you guys don't follow him, or you don't know who he is, Adam Miller is part of the Marshall Islands DAO. And the Marshall Islands is one of the first nations to include DAOs into a legal strategy or a legal framework so that they can operate as a business. And so that's where Adam, that's what kind of what Adam does. And he also does a lot of speaking engagements on DAOs in general.
Truly. So if you are a DAO or you know a community that is a DAO and you or they are looking to take your business and to bring it into the real world, so that way you can focus on your dreams, you can focus on where you want to take this, and you want to give yourself the legal framework protection so that way you can operate in the real world, protect your community, then you should go to MyDAO, use the promo code JOY for 10% off of your introductory package, or for that matter, the premium package. And yeah, make sure to tell them Doy sent you and have some meaningful conversations about what you're trying to do. And if you have questions about whether or not you should reach out or where you're at in your development as a DAO or your community is at in development as a DAO, please reach out to us, the Doy Foundation, anytime on our Discord or through our Telegram. And strike up a conversation. We'd be happy to work through the details and see whether or not it makes sense to go get connected with Adam Miller and the team over at MyDAO. We'd be happy to work through that with you.
Yeah, awesome. He is a delight to work with, too. He really is a fun guy to work with. And any, just about anybody would enjoy that conversation and working through the process with him.
Oh, for sure. Adam is awesome. And for those who haven't listened to it already, there's a pretty spectacular podcast that we had that's in the episodes channel and also on Spotify and iTunes and iHeartRadio and Podbean, where we interviewed Adam Miller and talked deeper about MyDAO. I've also too thrown a link in the podcast chat, which is www.mydao.org, which is MIDAO.org. Once again, use the promo code DOY, D-O-Y, for 10% off.
Yeah, so Corey, let's dig into the DAO for just a second and talk this through and kind of understand what's going on there.
Yes, absolutely. So first and foremost, there's some pretty interesting things in the podcast chat that I want to start in order so that way we can unpack them and build out a full picture of how you dig into these things. The first thing is that deepdao.io/organizations. For those of you who can't click the link, whenever you click the link, it'll take you to the DeepDAO website, which deepdao.io, which allows you to see, well, and search by DAOs. What's really cool about it is there's a lot of different metrics for where you can look at things. And my favorites are the treasury. It shows you the size of the treasury, like how much the value of the treasury assets are. And also to the amount of governance token holders, and of course, active members and proposals and the amount of votes that they've had, which is really cool. So if you haven't used deepdao.io, it's a great tool. And also too, for those of you supporting the DOI community and connecting with other DAOs that are hoping to build a better, brighter future, this is a great place to aggregate data, to organize this information and connect us. So that way we can make sure that we're the glue of this ecosystem, then not just make DAOs, but to make DAOs matter and connect all the different organizations together that helps individuals and communities get to that other side. Now, looking at deepdao.io, you'll notice that BitDAO is actually number 3 behind Uniswap and Gnosis, or Genesis, depending on how you pronounce it.
With an impressive $1.6 billion in their treasury, not too shabby.
Truly. Not too shabby. At one point in time, they were the largest treasury, but the BitDAO token has gone down quite a bit in value with everything going on. It got hit pretty hard. But nonetheless, this is because the treasury is often comprised of the value of the tokens in the treasury. So they'll use their own tokens, kind of like the problem with the Luna, because part of the UST, the US Terra, was that was backed by the value of Luna. Whenever Luna tanked, then they no longer had the ability to stabilize the token. But point being is that most DAOs will use their own tokens and the value of their own tokens to build out their treasuries, or many. So to that point, treasury values can, well, fluctuate.
Right.
But that's it. Deep DAO, that's there. So as we go through different organizations, this is a great place to go. And of course, if there's any community that you want us to dive into, talk about, make sure to let us know in the podcast chat. We'd love to cover it on another podcast. So next thing we do there is you can also see a link to the CoinMarketCap. And this allows you to get a lot of the data. Some of it was on Deep DAO, but a lot of the data that you'd be used to seeing, you know, pricing, what's happened over the last hour, 24 hours, et cetera, market cap, fully diluted market cap. We did that on a previous training educational series where we went through CoinMarketCap, and I'm sure we will do it again. But briefly, that's a link to that, so you can check that out. And moving forward, this is actually really interesting. BitDAO has raised a lot of money in the traditional space. So if you look at the link, for those of you who are in the podcast chat and can click it, for those of you who aren't, I'll communicate it. If you check out Crunchbase, so www.crunchbase.com, which for those of you who don't know, Crunchbase is an aggregator of data for VC firms, angel investors, that shows where Web2 companies and, well, companies in general that have raised, you know, venture capital, where they got their capital and how much, when, et cetera. And it takes it all the way through the rounds, and they have a number of companies that have gone public, and you can see a lot of really cool information. So if you click on this or go there, if you can't click, you'll be able to look up BitDAO, and you'll see that they've gotten $230 million in total funding, which is
pretty impressive.
Pretty impressive. Yeah. Among those people, Peter Thiel, which, you know, like him or, you know, have your, you know, a difference of opinions, he's definitely an outspoken, interesting person. Well, he is part of that lead investment. So, you know, if you've got the likes of Peter Thiel and others dumping, you could say hundreds of millions of dollars, that's an interesting concept of, you know, where this could go, because regardless of what the token value is, if you've got $230 million in the bank, you're going to be able to stick around.
Yeah. Yeah. All you got to do is not make too many bad moves in a row, right?
Well, one hopes. I mean, it would take, I mean, once again, we said this before, I guess just ask Mike Tyson. So is it possible? Yes, it sure is.
Only if you buy Tigers.
Yes. So to that point, BitDAO, you know, the concept is what is BitDAO about? So for those who don't know, you can check out www.bitdao.io. I'm going to drop that link in the chat. And we're going to talk about this a little bit. But in its simple form, it's actually pretty similar to the DOI, except for the concept is not only are they, well, I guess, let me rephrase that. Not only are we focusing on, and future iterations as this progresses, you know, the find, fund, fix aspect, you know, along the roadmap, they're more focused on supporting the ecosystem with grants and with loans and, well, you know, investments, and they take tokens and build out a treasury with it. So much like it would be the DOI, except for not quite the same aspect of the requirements of impact, ethics, and sustainability. However, they have supported some pretty interesting projects. And they have, to date, allocated over $638 million across all the different labs and different grants.
Yeah, that's
and
a big, that's a big chunk.
It is. So one of the things that I thought was pretty cool was the edudao.io. So they have given $33 million to edudao.io, which is an incubating innovators of tomorrow by empowering university groups and centers with resources and capital. So that was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. BitDAO has given $33 million to EduDAO. I thought was pretty neat. And for that matter, those who don't know, PleaserDAO, which that's a pretty big name in the space, which is a collective of DeFi lenders, early NFT collectors, digital artists. They've they gave PleaserDAO $6.5 million. Oh, actually, that looks like an active proposal. I take that back. That's an active proposal. So apparently, date approved, April 21st. So that actually just passed last month. So yeah, it's pretty cool. So if you have a governance token, you can go and vote on these different proposals. Should we give PleaserDAO $6.5 million? You can say yes or no, which I think is pretty cool. Should we give EduDAO $33 million? On December 16th of 2021, they voted yes. So that was pretty cool. So this is a real DAO building something in the real space, which I think is pretty cool. So Phil, hearing this from the outside in, thinking about BitDAO for the first time, what questions might you have?
How do we get some BitDAO money?
You mean the same kind of money that BitDAO did? Peter Thiel, how you get that.
Let's get us a BitDAO grant.
Oh, yeah, money from BitDAO.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Hey, that's how it's done. You know, I would say we could get somewhere between EduDAO and PleaserDAO.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, they have a different focus. Their focus is on industry stuff and not quite on the humanitarian side that we're looking at. So we're definitely not the same as them, but I do see the similarities there. And I think they would like to see us go far.
I would think so as well, too. And so for those who are curious how the treasury grows, BitDAO infuses capital agnostically across industries, chains, and products. Its treasury is supported by the contributions from Bybit and its various cycle of value created by its, you know, things that it's invested in and its partner labs. So essentially, long story short, kind of like the DOI, except for it's a bit more agnostic in its implementation. So I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And looking at the podcast chat here, is there any questions that we might, or conversations we might want to have around the concept of BitDAO?
Now, I know, Corey, we are also going to be discussing another DAO here in the coming days, or maybe pushed out even a week. And it's a DAO that also offers a family DAO structure, which is pretty interesting. And I think we'll be able to have a good conversation around that also.
Truly. Looking at the podcast chat, Peter is already in 74. Peter Thiel is already in 74 different spaces. Peter can do one more with the DOI. Know what? I think so too, B-Man.
That's right. Let's send him a message. So. He's probably going to download it anyways. So, Peter, when you're listening to this later, hit us up.
So I think that we are coming close to the end of our podcast here. As we wait for people to type in any questions they might have about BitDAO, or just the concepts of how to use DeepDAO.io or Crunchbase, which we introduced for the first time, as they're trying to immerse themselves with that. Is there anything else that we might want to do in this last couple minutes to close out this particular podcast? I know we talked about...
Let's also talk for just a second about June 24th and 25th in New York City. DAO Planet NYC is going to be hosting an event, and you can come to... you can come over here to... We've got some links here on the Discord, and you can get over to... But it's daoplanet.nyc. And it is going to be a pretty action-packed event, right? There are some really big speakers that are coming. It's going to be interesting. It's an event for all things DAO, and you're going to have some big players in that arena there. There's going to be big investors, and there's going to be avenues for help if you're creating a DAO. So we encourage everybody to come up to it. It's going to be a good time. That's on the 24th and 25th of June.
That's brilliant. So if you come, make sure that you come and say hi to us. So, and for that matter, hopefully we've got some swag for you to purchase to help support the cause. Buy some swag.
Yeah, awesome.
And if you can't come, but you want to gift a ticket to somebody, make sure that whenever you go to the DAO Planet NYC page, the events page, that you use the promo code DOI, for 20% off of your ticket. and then send that to them as a way to tell them that you love them. Because quite frankly, any other way that you could tell someone that you love them and care about them would be less awesome than buying them a ticket to Dow Planet NYC with the promo code DOI.
Yeah, and if you tell us they're coming, we'll be nice to them.
But if you don't, we won't.
That's right. We're going to be mean to everybody else, but we'll be nice to them if you let us know they're coming.
Hey, isn't that how that works?
Well, we'll try to be nice to mostly everybody.
Well, I think we're getting some pretty unanimous feedback that perhaps maybe between the Crunchbase, the deepdow.io and the BitDow, that perhaps there's so much information in there that there's too many beautiful questions to ask. So in that way, what I would say is next steps for those who are unfamiliar with BitDAO is you may have to get yourself set up. Depending on what part of the world you're in, you may have to use it. Just make sure that the regulations allow you to integrate with it, because it's not in every country are you able to do that. I'm not saying you should do this, and I'm not implying that you should do this, but one might be able to use a VPN if one was so inclined.
Trickery. I like it. But we're not advising it if you're not supposed to use one.
Yes, if you're not supposed to use one, don't. So
unless you can get your hands on one.
So to that point, I think that you can get involved and in a lot of places and purchase Bybit, which is the mechanism for BitDAO, and just get started. And if you can't, depending on where you're at in the world, you can. It's a pretty interesting thing to follow. Perhaps maybe pick a different DAO on the deep DAO list, maybe, you know, Genesis or Gnosis, and get into that.
Yeah. Well, oftentimes it's going to be a little bit safer buy, correct? Because you're involved in a DAO, so there's going to be different rules, and there's going to be way for oversight versus a meme coin. You know, I like the term that we buying and selling versus investing. Right. And so when you're buying and selling and you're buying in something that is established and that has good governance rules, it just makes sense. There's going to be some longevity there, and that potentially it's a safer buy than some other ones. And thanks, Aridow.
So truly to that.
Threw up everything for Dow Planet in there. Links for everything.
Yeah. Thank you for that. That's awesome. Make sure to come and join us. So, Bill, you know, per usual, there's always more to talk about, but at some point in time, we have to stop talking.
It's got in tonight, and this time is that time. So this has been enjoyable. It was a great weekend. Looked forward to getting in here tonight, and it was enjoyable. So I hope you guys come back to see us. We'll be here Wednesday at 8 p.m. Central, and again on Friday for the Friday Fun Show, where we'll try not to talk about anything depressing. But for myself, Phil Ward, and for Corey Fico, we invite you to be kind to somebody. It might change their life, but it definitely will change yours. So until Wednesday, take care.
Thanks for listening to the DOI Podcast. If you've enjoyed our time together, please rate and review the podcast. Together, we can achieve a brighter future. Help us bring this information to the world by sharing it with friends and family. The DOI Coin. The crypto coin for the people, by the people.